Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record Program 274, titled, If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On, Part Two. This is a continuation of an ongoing series that deals with the German corporate control over American media, and the reference is to a passage from the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk that I excerpted and referenced in the first side of this program, so if the reference is unfamiliar, check the first side of this program. We've been talking about the Bertelsmann firm, a firm with a very strong Nazi heritage, and a firm that circumstantial evidence strongly suggests is part of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the Bormann Group being the economic and political component of a Third Reich gone underground, quite literally a Third Reich that in mafia-like fashion has gone underground and perpetuated itself in a very effective, clandestine, and underground fashion, utilizing not only their enormous economic clout, but also the political and lethal intimidation of the underground SS, and also some of their connections with political structures around the world. We've been talking about Bertelsmann and the number of executives who have been precipitously leaving Bertelsmann for one reason or another, as Bertelsmann, which in partnership with the German firm von Holtzbrinck, another Nazi-linked firm, which in all likelihood is part of the Bormann Group, control American publishing and English-language publishing, Bertelsmann is now positioning itself to become number one in music, although not yet controlling worldwide music. But we're going to continue with our analysis of BMG, Bertelsmann's music division, and its maneuvering toward controlling the music field or becoming the largest music company by merging in a BMG-controlled merger with EMI. Turning now to the Los Angeles Times of Tuesday, January 9th of the year 2001, this is an article by Chuck Phillips. It's headlined, Exec Exodus Continues at BMG. The exodus of executives at Bertelsmann Music Group continued Monday with technology head Kevin Conroy and Chief Financial Officer Tom McIntyre leaving the company. The moves follow the unexpected departures in November of Chief Executive Strauss Zelnick and Chairman Michael Dornemann, who were forced out in a power struggle and replaced by BMG veteran Rudy Gassner. The German conglomerate last week appointed former TV executive Rolf Schmidholz to run the music division following the death of Gassner from a heart attack in December. That was a week, that was a week before he was going to assume control of BMG. Continuing, the move comes at a time when Bertelsmann is pushing to close a proposed merger with EMI Group to create the world's biggest music conglomerate. And bear in mind Serpent's Walk, where it talks about, describing the Underground Reich and the Bormann Group gaining control of American media. Quote, and this is one of the Nazi faithful Rentsch discussing this process, and after discussing taking over a huge supercorporation that runs a chunk of the American media, and it was being done quietly, one huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. Kind of like what's happening at BMG as they position themselves to become number one in music after already having taken a pioneering step in gaining control, effectively anyway, of Napster. More about changes at the top of Bertelsmann. This from the LA Times of Saturday, January 20th of the year 2001. This is an article by Chuck Phillips and Jeff Leeds, LEEDS. It's headed RCA Chief to Head Bertelsmann North America Music. This reads in part, Bob Jamieson, president of Bertelsmann Music Group's RCA record label, was elevated to chief executive of Bertelsmann's North America music operations as part of a reorganization of the company's management team. The move follows the appointment of former television executive Rolf Schmidholz to run the media giant's music division. And again, in side A of this broadcast, we took a look at a brief reference to Rolf Schmidholz, who wound up in control of Stern magazine after Stern had given Bertelsmann problems by being, quote, too far left, unquote. And Schmidholz basically got the magazine under control. Schmidholz also affected key television mergers for Bertelsmann, and in particular organizing a Luxembourg-based holding company in its central role, its keystone role, in Bertelsmann's growing television empire as well. And recall in discussing Bertelsmann positioning itself to move into the North American television market through a joint venture with Pearson, a British firm, we took a look at their intention to gain control of American television stations and move into the American television market once the FCC deregulated the American TV market and made it easier for foreign firms to move in. It'll be interesting to see whether the Bush administration and Michael Powell, Colin Powell's son, who's head of the FCC, wind up doing that. More about the positioning of Bertelsmann to, quote, merge, unquote, with EMI, thereby creating by far the largest music company in the world. Bear in mind that Bertelsmann's CEO Mittelhoff sits on the board of directors of Vivendi. This comes from the Financial Times of January 27th and January 28th of the year 2001. This is an article by Aisling O'Connor. It's headlined, Music Majors Try to Strike a Chord, subtitled, But EMI and BMG may find it hard to allay competition concerns, writes Aisling O'Connor. This article reads in part as follows about the negotiations between EMI and BMG. Bear in mind that an EMI-Time Warner merger was scotched by the EU. The music majors could be forgiven for thinking that the idea of consolidation in their industry does not strike much of a chord with European regulators. A move by EMI and Warner Music to create the world's largest music group has already fallen by the wayside. A second attempt by EMI with another rival, Bertelsmann, is looking laborious to say the least. Lawyers and financial advisors at EMI and BMG Music, a division of the privately held German media company, who were working through the possible ways to cut a deal, will not have been happy to hear yesterday that the European Commission is investigating the five majors over allegations of CD price fixing. It remains to be seen whether that investigation impedes or ultimately blocks the maneuvering by BMG to favor to effect a dominant merger with EMI, but we will see what happens. A very, very significant Bertelsmann hiring points in the direction of Bertelsmann accelerating its corporate acquisitions. By the way, the capital for its acquisition war chest comes from the selling off of its interest in AOL, though it still has very strong connections with AOL, and there's strong participation by Deutsche Bank and Deutsche Asset Management in AOL. The following is from the New York Times of Thursday, February 1st of the year 2001. This is an article by David D. Kirkpatrick. It's headlined, Ex-Regulator Hired to Advise Bertelsmann. And this deals with a key American hiring, the hiring of an American by Bertelsmann. And this, again, points at the regulatory concerns of Bertelsmann and its desire to effect acquisitions. The individual hired is Joel I. Klein, and he is described here as follows. The German media company Bertelsmann has hired Joel I. Klein, K-L-E-I-N, the former head of the Justice Department's antitrust division, as a strategic advisor. He brings a prodigious set of connections at a time when the concern is poised for acquisitions. The efforts by Mr. Klein to beef up the Justice Department's antitrust enforcement and its lawsuit against the Microsoft Corporation made him a high-profile figure in the Clinton administration before he resigned in September. Over the last 3 years, he also developed a close personal friendship with Thomas Mittelhoff, the chief executive of Bertelsmann, as the media company expanded its holdings in the United States. Skipping down, Bertelsmann is currently in talks to acquire the record company EMI, a deal that is likely to face the scrutiny of European regulators. Those regulators are also investigating the possibility of collusion on compact disc prices arising among European. And skipping inside of the story, record music companies. Skipping down again, speaking of Bertelsmann, the company is currently shopping for new acquisitions with a $12 billion war chest left over from the sale of its shares in America Online and other internet investments. Mr. Klein, 54, who was born in the Bronx, will assume the title of Chief United States Liaison Officer to the parent company, Bertelsmann AG. He will also become chairman and chief executive of Bertelsmann Incorporated, which handles real estate, financing, and other services for the company's North American divisions. He will not be responsible for Random House, BMG, or any of the company's other operating divisions. So the head of the Justice Department's Antitrust Division, an individual who has developed a close friendship with Thomas Mittelhoff, is now hired by Bertelsmann in anticipation of further acquisitions and also in order to help negotiate the regulatory maze that Bertelsmann will face as it grows. I would also note that Bertelsmann has obviously formed some links with people from the outgoing Clinton, or now gone out Clinton administration, as well as with George Bush the Elder, that is, George the First. And in For the Record program 273, titled B as in Bush, B as in Borman, we looked at the growing body of circumstantial evidence suggesting that the Bush family may very well be not only part of the Borman Group, but in fact the American Point element of the Borman Group, or at least a front for the American Point element. Now, in connection with the German corporate acquisitions and the control of American media, consider the following. This is an article that we dealt with in For the Record program number 266. This is from the San Jose Mercury News of Thursday, December 14th of the year 2000. This is an article by Paul Meller, capital M-E-L-L-E-R, of the New York Times, a state-line Brussels, Belgium, and headlined, European Firms Get Poison Pill. And this reads in part as follows. A groundbreaking law intended to speed up industrial integration in Europe was stymied Wednesday when the European Parliament approved a measure that would permit the managers of a European company to fend off a hostile takeover bid without the permission of the shareholders. The Parliament also passed an amendment that would force companies to consult with unions or with their workforces before responding to a hostile bid. Another amendment obliges a target company to safeguard jobs when negotiating with an acquirer. Members of the European Parliament have argued that empowering managers to fend off hostile approaches without the consent of shareholders is simply providing them with defensive measures similar to the so-called poison pills that U.S. companies are allowed to use. They also argued that the measure would deter speculators from bidding up or down the price of the target company. By the way, this would effectively block an American firm from effecting a hostile takeover of a European firm. It remains to be seen whether European firms can continue to effectively control American companies. Skipping down, the European Parliament has adopted measures that would curb takeover activity in Europe, limit Europe's ability to adjust to becoming one single market, and in the long run, harm the European economy, said Peter Montagnon, head of investment affairs at the Association of British Insurers. But skipping down, by granting companies' management the right to fend off hostile takeovers without shareholder approval, management could act to defend their own potentially narrower interests rather than being obliged to act in the interest of the target company's shareholders as a whole, Bolkestein said. That's head of the European Commissioner for the Internal Market. Continuing, this could effectively hinder company restructuring on a pan-European level. By the way, it would also block European firms from being taken over by American companies, and that could prove very significant in the context of this series. Although my noting of this particular article and its potential strategic effects on globalization and economic concentration should in no way be misunderstood as an endorsement of either globalization or economic concentration, but those are simply facts of life. And within that the context of those facts of life, the series on German corporate control over American publishing, that in turn seen again against the background of the Bormann Group and the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, which I believe is a blueprint for worldwide Nazi control, a manifesto not unlike another National Vanguard Books publication, The Turner Diaries, which is better known. Continuing, Tim Cargill, a lawyer working for the takeover panel, said he was disappointed with the vote in the European Parliament. The amendment empowering company managers in a takeover situation, quote, runs contrary to one of the fundamental elements of the directive, unquote. He said this could be used to help block American corporate acquisitions in Europe. It remains to be seen, and this could further the scenario that I've seen in Serpent's Walk, although, again, I should not be misunderstood as being an advocate of either increased economic concentration or globalization. In a number of broadcasts, I've spoken about the European Monetary Union, which is distinct from, although inextricably linked to, the European Union, as being the realization of a plan put forward in the 1840s by pan-German theoretician and economist Friedrich Liest. There are numerous broadcasts dealing with that, most recently For the Record program number 232, as well as some discussion of that in number 266. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. Now, people should listen very carefully to the language discussed in this particular article. I want to note also, first of all, the blueprints for the submerging, in effect, of all of the member countries of the EU into one superstate, which would be dominated by Germany, the dominant economic power in Europe, and also the largest Central European country in terms of population. Also bear in mind the Friedrich Liest formula, that economic control leads automatically to political control, and my discussion in numerous broadcasts available from Spitfire that the European Monetary Union represents the realization of the Liest formula. Note also the language being used here by both Gerhard Schroeder and Joschka Fischer. This is Hitler-like language. In a particular note that Joschka Fischer of the Green Party was head of the German peace, or the most visible element of the German peace movement, which convinced Gorbachev to go ahead to give the nod to German reunification. And note also that then Joschka Fischer became the leading Serb demonizer and the one of the leading saber rattlers for war in the Balkans, which has benefited Germany. And note now that Joschka Fischer, who I personally believe is BND and part of a left coalition government, Joschka Fischer is the German foreign minister who is pushing for basically a German-dominated Europe. My guess is that if Joschka Fischer is able to maintain this left facade for what is essentially a continuation of German imperial aims and pan-German global geopolitical aims in Europe, left pretense, that left facade will be dropped, and we will see the real and more brutal face of German imperial control. A research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. Note also the merging of several different lines of inquiry, not only my discussion of the EMU and the Friedrich Liest formula, but note also the role here of the Bertelsmann Foundation. Listen very carefully to the following. Research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from The Scotsman. This is from The Scotsman's website at The Scotsman, one word, thescotsman.co.uk. This is by Alan Hall in Berlin, January 23rd of the year 2001. This was posted on January 26th of the year 2001. This is titled, Schroeder Launches Brussels Offensive, and this follows up most recently on number 266. Germany, plowing ahead with plans to strip EU members of sovereign decision-making, will throw its weight behind federalist plans at the Strasbourg summit with France in a week's time. Berlin is expressing confidence and flexing newfound muscle as its economy perks up and the status of its post-war relationship with France is redefined. Its new drive for a Europe governed from Brussels shows scant regard for a Britain and other countries that continue to voice fears of national sovereignty being subsumed beneath a rising tide of bureaucracy. Listen to the following. In particular, note the lack of alarm, for example, among the patriot and militia movement in the United States, which has demonized the United Nations as being a point element for a one-world government. The EMU and the EU, dominated by Germany, would appear to be a much more realistic embodiment of those fears. Listen to the following. The Chancellor, Gerhard Schroeder, a year away from a general election, knows that the eyes are off the ball in both Britain and France, where national concerns are on domestic polling this year. Until now, he had left most of the European sculpting to his foreign minister, Joschka Fischer, but at a weekend think tank in Berlin, the Chancellor outlined his vision for a Europe where decisions on tax, defense, health, insurance, and a plethora of other issues were defined by the EU and not national governments. One German newspaper said his comments would, quote, send a shudder through London and Paris, unquote. by the way, people looking far ahead should perhaps see a shudder here in the United States, where ultimately, if the EMU becomes the dominant economic element in the world, we may find ourselves being little more than a German colony, or a fractured United States, perhaps with the South seceding, becoming satellite states, Balkanized satellite states of a European German-dominated superstate. Continuing. Those shudders will be addressed tomorrow when Mr. Fisher meets Robin Cook in London, particularly as Mr. Fisher will try to sell Britain a timetable for agreeing to a common European constitution to be agreed upon at another conference in 2004. The weekend think tank in Berlin was hosted by the Bertelsmann Foundation. And skipping down, Mr. Schroeder, according to close government sources, saw Nice as a failure of the policy of intergovernmental cooperation, which is why he now wants full steam ahead for the EU to take the decisions and make the laws of the community of over 300 million people. German thinking is that the EU is, quote, wobbling, unquote, on eastwards expansion, the enlargement that will affect Germany the most with its borders with Poland and the Czech Republic. Quote, Germany has come to regard France as having an anti-European Commission attitude, said a government source. It believes it must stand up for itself, unquote. Romano Prodi of Italy is fully behind the German initiative. He declared intergovernmental cooperation as, quote, a recipe for mutual mistrust between member states in the absence of an honest broker, unquote, the honest broker being his commission. At Nice, Germany tried and failed to win more power for Germany in the so-called vote reweighting, unquote, to reflect the greater population of Germany over other states. Now it wants to put that issue on the back burner while forging ahead with plans to delegate national powers to European decision-makers. Germany's bold new posturing at the weekend was summed up by the country's influential Frankfurter Allgemeine newspaper, which said, quote, There was one thing people there had not heard before. The clarity with which Germany intends to draw the lines of future development, thereby incidentally laying down direction, pace, and content for its French neighbor. His comments will send a shudder through his partners in London and Paris, unquote. Those comments included Mr. Schroeder saying, quote, We need a simplification and a redesign of treaties, a clear division of authority between the Brussels institutions, and above all, a clear sharing out of responsibilities between the EU, its member states, and the regions, unquote. As to the Franco-German relationship, Mr. Schroeder admitted, quote, Undoubtedly it needs redefining, unquote. There was little pleasure across the Rhine at his comments or of those of Mr. Fisher, who also spoke stridently of German efforts to build the federalist utopia that has long been at the heart of his political philosophy. Listen to Fisher's language and imagine this was Hitler, because it doesn't take a lot of imagination, the only difference being that it'll be Deutschmarks or Euros instead of Panzerkampf Wagen Mark IVs crossing borders. That was a German tank of World War II. Listen to Fisher's comments. Quote, The German government will not stand idly by, but would take courageous steps against the centrifugal forces of the intergovernmentalists, unquote, Mr. Fisher said. Very familiar rhetoric indeed. And again, this particular think tank was hosted by the Bertelsmann Foundation. And listen to one of the other things that was proposed at this think tank. The role of the United States within the EU club was also discussed at the weekend with Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State in the Nixon administration, there as a participant. Members were agreed that the EU must maintain and develop strong ties with Washington, particularly now that the Bush administration may turn away from foreign policy in favor of isolationism. And again, I have asked the question about whether perhaps the Bush administration may be the point man for the Bormann group in point element for the Bormann group in the United States. And again, for people who find my ruminations concerning the Bertelsmann firm and the Bormann group utterly ridiculous, let's turn again to the back of the book Serpent's Walk. This Nazi tract, which I believe is a blueprint and not the novel it purports to be, describes the following, this from the back cover. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. That's fiction, or, quote, fiction, unquote. Now let's turn to reality. This is from The Nation magazine of December 28th of the year 1998, taken from The Nation's website at thenation.com. That's one word. This is by Hirsch Fischler and John Friedman. It's titled Bertelsmann's Nazi Past, and of the Bertelsmann firm in World War II, we read, issuing more than 20 million books, Bertelsmann was the largest supplier to the Army and supplied the SS. And of the background of Bertelsmann patriarch Heinrich Mohn, we read, Mohn had, quote, forgotten, unquote, to mention that he had been a passive member of the SS, as well as a supporter of the Hitler Youth, and a member of the prestigious National Socialist Flying Corps, according to denazification files in the Central State Archive in Dusseldorf. And again, turning to Serpent's Walk and of the attempts at reshaping public opinion. But all we ever, this by the way is Wrench talking about how they're going to reshape public opinion. We don't try. You can't erase 100 years of lying propaganda overnight. We play those aspects down and stress the positive ones instead, the mystique, the scientific approach to racial genetics, the efficiency and organization, the dedication, and the heroism. People will buy that. And skipping down, speaking of the Holocaust, Wrench says, what gas chambers? Show me one piece of real evidence. That is, quote, fiction, unquote, from Serpent's Walk, and again, I believe that it's actually a blueprint. Now, let's turn once again to The Nation magazine, this again from The Nation's website at thenation.com. This also is by Hirsch Fischler and John Friedman. This is titled Bertelsmann's Revisionist, and this is about the official house historian for the Bertelsmann firm, a guy named Dirk Bavendam. And of Bavendam, we read, his book, Roosevelt's Way to War, Roosevelt's Weg zum Krieg, was published in 1983. Rewriting history, he stated that Roosevelt, not Hitler, had caused World War II. He also wrote that American Jews controlled most of the media, unquote, and he claimed they gave a false picture of Hitler, skipping down. In a second book, Roosevelt's War, published in 1993, reissued in 1998, Bavendam accuses the U.S. president of enacting a plan to start World War II. In the same book, he suggests that Hitler's threats in early 1939 against European Jewry were a reaction to Roosevelt's strategy against Germany. And that, again, from the Bertelsmann official house historian. So it shouldn't be as that much of a surprise to see the following. Turning again to the article with which we began the broadcast, this from the CNN website at CNN.com. This is an IDG story by Rick Pereira. It's from December 20th of the year 2000. Bertelsmann addresses Napster Nazi charges. Just weeks after forming an alliance with Napster, German media giant Bertelsmann found itself answering charges from German law enforcement authorities that the online music exchange enables the spread of right-wing extremist music. The statement came in response to charges leveled by the Verfassungsschutz, the constitutional protection office in the state of Lower Saxony. The office is responsible for enforcing Germany's laws against incitement to racial hatred, under which much neo-Nazi music is banned. Quote, Napster offers today the platform for neo-Nazi music worldwide, unquote, Verfassungsschutz spokesman Rudiger Hesse. Again quoting, I can easily download any title that's on the index of banned music to my hard drive and burn compact discs of it, he said. He added that previously, neo-Nazi music was exchanged under the table in the form of illegally sold CDs. The biggest problem now is that everyone can access it, unquote, he said. And that concludes For the Record program number 274, side 2. If music be the food of love, march on. munch on, excuse me. This is being recorded on February 4th of the year 2001. A description of this program available on the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Many of these shows are archived on the WFMU website at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.